And welcome back to the Coast to Coast to Coast podcast. I am your host, Chad, and I am joined with Jim, Chip, and Dale out on all of the coasts across America. How are you guys doing today?
Doing good. Doing good.
Feeling good.
All right. I'm feeling pretty good over here myself. I'm fighting through that start of the year diet, and I had my first workout today, and it was pathetic. I was dragging my butt across San Diego. Like after the first mile of my run, I thought I was going to lose it. Chip, I heard your diet's going pretty well.
Yeah. So I made it 2 days in. I ordered some workout stuff and thought considerably about working out again. Unfortunately, I made it 2 days and I'm working on it though. I'm going to get back in the groove. I got a plan and it's going to work out. I'm going to get it in.
New Year's resolutions. Yeah, they're meant to be broken, I guess. Today, we haven't gotten a chance to get into any good drink things lately. You know, the themes kind of came to an end at the end of December, and that's fine. I'm just drinking a glass of white wine today because I'm carb watching, but I can't really complain about it. I kind of love me some wine.
I actually have nothing right now.
Yeah, there you go. See, it's a different kind of podcast today. We'll be sober and sharper than ever.
I was going to get something nice set up with you, Chad, there, a little wine or maybe a bourbon, but I reached in the fridge and just the Bud Light met my hand and there was no turning back.
I like how you said earlier that you vibe off of. Oh, nice. Not bad. Okay. So you're winning the battle right now with all of us.
Going with the accumulation since you get like another foot of snow this weekend. So
that's unbelievable, man.
Are you?
Still unbelievable.
Yeah. There's a chance. It we'll see. There's a lot of differing things. I guess it'll be another day or two before we know like how bad, but it could be pretty bad. So we'll see. I ordered a generator.
Stock up. From Amazon. Stock up on canned goods and toilet paper.
I will tell you, man, it is freezing here.
I missed all the weather.
Oh, it's so it got cold, but I'm glad we're not dealing with like heavy snow.
Yeah.
That sounds pretty rough, man. I hope you guys do all right and get through it.
Yeah, it's got to be tougher there too because you guys don't get enough snow to be ready for it, right?
Yeah.
Once you go south of Ohio, you just stop getting ready.
Yeah, the plowing, the taking care of roads. I mean, the city basically just shuts down. Like, everyone is on the same page with, like, hey, there's snow on the roads. No one's going anywhere or doing anything. It's so weird coming from Ohio where it's just like that's what you do.
Yeah,
and here it's like, yeah, we just close everything. We just close. The attitude is like, well, someone could get hurt or get into an accident, so we're just going to close everything.
Yeah, they can't have that attitude in Cleveland because they'd have to close for like 6 months most years. You guys did get some snow in Cleveland, though, or in Ohio, right? Because I saw some friends on Instagram posting some stuff.
I got like a light like dusting. Dusting. Yeah.
Yeah, a dusting. It's already gone. I love that phrase. I love that term. only in Ohio are you like, it snowed, it's a dusting.
Like an old in Tennessee,
they shut down the city. Just we have guess a Victory Tuesday podcast today. I know we had some mixed feelings about the victory. I had them myself throughout the game, but it was a victory. The Browns have a way of beating the Bengals. I think I read that they've won 7 of the last 8 or something like that, or 6 of the last 7 meetings between the two, which is insane. Where are you guys on the win? Were you excited? I think I was thinking draft pick, but I kept getting excited whenever we scored.
I don't really count that as a Bengals, you know, a win against the Bengals. That was like a practice squad team.
It just felt weird. It felt like a preseason game or something. Like, yeah. I just didn't even care. I was like, all right, this is like a little charity event. We'll go out there and, get drunk.
Yeah. But it was a little bit odd. I think knowing it wasn't going to count for anything, which, by the way, in past years, it wasn't going to count, but we were begging for a victory just so we could have something. Now,
yeah, so like, we don't go defeated.
Right. Now our expectations were like, well, we wanted the playoffs. Now that we know we're locked out of them, meh. If we even had a mild chance of making the playoffs, I think everybody would have been pretty hyped about that game, though.
Yeah.
The Browns played pretty well, both sides of the ball. So
honestly, though, man, like, I don't know if I would want to be in that situation as, like, where the playoffs were kind of on the line, but it depended on everything, like, with how the Steelers were. I don't know if I'd want to be in that situation, because then I would end up hating the Browns and whoever the hell screwed us out of it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, we played Bengals well, but they also sat a lot of people, like their quarterback, Joe Burrow, and I don't even know who else. I honestly didn't pay attention that close, but Burrow alone sitting out is obviously a huge difference.
I was surprised that Ja'Marr Chase was out there.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I did too. He was probably making sure he set some rookie records. He wanted to make sure he got all
yeah,
that.
Seriously, that probably is part of it. Well, so I don't know. Were you guys watching the game? Which take were you coming from? Because I went into the game thinking draft pick, and then one of my friends was just pounding the table at, no, you gotta continue to build a winning mentality for the guys that are out there playing, and you can't just take a loss for draft picks, which I don't think the players should or were in that field. But I think as a fan, and let's just say as a GM, you're feeling a little differently about a win or loss and where it will put you than if you're a coach or a player, because the players aren't worried about draft picks. They don't want to be replaced anyway. They just want to win, play well, and keep their spot on the team. And I don't know. I think I went into the game thinking, you know, if they lose, they might get themselves all the way to like the 10th pick. And if they win, you know, they, who knows where they'll pick. And then as the game went on and I'm watching the defense play and things like that, I thought it'll probably be good for these guys to leave the building with the taste of a win in their mouth and knowing that they fell short, but have the capacity to do better. So,
yeah, when we're looking at guys out there almost getting hurt and thinking back to the whole Doug Peterson fiasco where he basically got murdered for pulling Hurts, and it's because the GM called down and basically said, look, you're not playing him. Like, we're not doing this. We're not trying to win here. So obviously the guys who are out there are going to want to go out there and win, but to me, there was no benefit like that. That doesn't carry over to the next year. I actually listened to Chris Long's Greenlight Pod last week, and he was talking about like there not being a carryover from year to year. So much locker room turnover. Like, you never want to throw a game, but the coach can put in whoever they want, and
I think we just lost Dale.
Yep, Dale is down. The snow came
in the middle of a hot take.
Snow came down. You know,
buried him.
I'll just piggyback off his take, though. I haven't heard that from a player before, but it probably, you know, it's nice to hear that from somebody like Chris Long, who's been in the game, to say something like the players don't really carry that over into the next season. That, you know, that last game. I will say, as a fan, though, when we're looking through the history, the final standings kind of do, I think, make a difference when you're looking at how your team, you know, does year to year. But I guess that is an interesting take to hear that players don't think it carries over like into any momentum for the next season, which I guess isn't shocking, but to hear it is I'm a little bit surprised.
Yeah, I could see them not really caring about it, you know?
Well, either way, they pulled the victory, and it did cost them 3 draft spots. So we'll get into the draft later. But honestly, with the way Andrew Berry's picking, it's now his job to, you know, figure out those 3 spots. If the 3 people we wanted go 10, 11, and 12, I guess, bummer. But the way he's picked lately, in the last 2 years, it'd be hard to believe that is going to be the case. Hopefully not. So, Bengals go down. It doesn't really affect anything because of the way the other games worked out. I think you guys already commented on the fact that not having Joe Burrow in was sort of the key to the Browns' victories. And I agree, the way he's playing this year is just sort of on a pretty elite level of quarterback, and not having him in there is just a different team you're playing. You know, this is what you wish you'd be playing every year against the Bengals, and it's sort of like a false advertisement that that's not what you got this Sunday.
It just sucks because we were supposed to be built like the Bengals.
Right. Well, I'll say this, though. When the Bengals were healthy, we did lay wood on them. I mean, we whooped them. So, I mean, I don't think I was really afraid of them. I'm just saying that this past win just didn't feel like much to me because they weren't in, you know, Burrow and them weren't in.
Yeah.
But well, we did lay the wood on them.
Yeah, we just celebrated at the bar just because it was one last meeting for us, and we were just excited to score some points and do some things. I think, to your point, Chip, the disappointing thing was they were probably going to sit, you know, in the position they're in individually, they were going to probably sit maybe a couple guys no matter what. And it's pretty disappointing seeing that we were able to beat them when they had everybody. We were able to beat them when they sat a guy or two. And our shortcomings were actually in other parts of the season, which is what made that game not matter, not anything that the Browns did that day or against the Bengals. It really was that long stretch of the Raiders, the Packers, the Ravens, and the Steelers, all very winnable games, all games the Browns blew. And it sort of led to this not meaning much, which is sad because I think if it did mean much, we still probably could have won. And I don't know if we're going very far in the playoffs with Case Keenum, but I did think another playoff year for this team, especially with the amount of young guys we have playing, would have been really nice for them. You know, even if you don't go anywhere, it's just good experience.
Do you think that earlier in the season, if Keenum played, that we would be in a different situation? We'd be in playoffs?
It'd be a close one. Like I said, I think – so what did you guys – the easy answer to that question is, what did you guys think of Keenum this game? Because he threw for a touchdown –
I say he didn't look good. He didn't look good, but
yeah, I was gonna say it looked very much to me. He gave up some pretty rough throws. He threw behind a couple of receivers and high a few times. He threw an interception into the end zone when we were on like the 10-yard line, and I ended up shaking my head and joking. Well,
it's exactly what you said before, Chad. An injured Baker Mayfield is. Maybe the same or a little bit better than
pretty close, actually. And you know, and we saw it, like I said, against the Lions, Case Keenum did not play very well. We won, but it was against the maybe second worst team in the league. And then what we saw against the Bengals, like our defense, as has been going on for the last 6 to 8 weeks, carried that game and the running game. And Keenum just played just enough to win, but made some really bad plays, really missed throws, made a couple though, just to keep the ball moving, and looked a lot like what Baker Mayfield has looked like. I mean, Baker Mayfield, the last two games has looked worse than ever. It's probably time to get him out of there. He was getting worse and worse and worse, but for most of the season injured, that's about what Baker Mayfield looked like to me. Everything except for the Green Bay game.
I didn't realize this until I looked it up just now, but D'Ernest Johnson had 123 yards and a touchdown.
I can't help but feel like,
dude, I know you love Jim, and I wanted to get to this point, but I can't help but to feel like, why didn't we use D'Ernest more throughout the year? I remember even when Chubb or Hunt was out, and it was Chubb and Johnson, and D'Ernest would get like one carry. Okay. And I'm like, what is going on? This guy's racking up 123 yards when he runs the ball.
It baffled me, Chip.
So first of all, I know I was ready to give Jim shit about this because I know the reason he loves D'Ernest Johnson so much is because he picked him up in fantasy. I got to give you props, man, because you were touting him the whole year. And now that, you know, I always talk about PFF as one of my big, like, two sources for information, and they have a big thing where they rate the players, but they don't rank them unless they've had enough stats, because they sort of understand the idea that one player going out and having three carries for 20 yards doesn't mean he's a 6.5 yard per carry player, because it's just not enough, you know, but as this season went on, D'Ernest Johnson just got more and more carries, and he was grading so high in PFF, and then he got more and more carries, and he was rating so high in PFF, but they weren't ranking him. And then he finally hit a threshold where he had enough carries that you can kind of compare him to all of the other starting running backs in the league, and he ended up finishing 9th. Do you know where Nick Chubb finished as far as rank, at least as far as ranking in PFF? 8th. So D'Ernest Johnson finished one spot behind Nick Chubb. Nick Chubb had an 82, and D'Ernest Johnson had an 81 score.
That's what I'm seeing, man. Like,
and they were both top six. They were both top six throughout the season in yards after, like, average yards after contact.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I was saying. Like, it looked like D'Ernest Johnson would gain, like, 8 to 10 yards almost every run.
Yeah, by the way, Kareem Hunt also had a 75. So you're looking at three running backs that literally are capable of starting pretty much anywhere in the league.
Yeah, and but here's the thing. I want to be excited about it next season. However, you got to use them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's great to have these players and these numbers. I'm loving hearing about these good scores. But they don't mean anything unless you're using them.
You know, I love them, and
they half frustrate me because of what you just said.
I think that ties back to our many conversations about run volume, right? Like, if Chubb's running the ball 23 times and we're only running it 24 times a game, then you don't have other touches for other players. And that went back to a lot of our criticism in the second halves of games and things like that, where we were just like, run the damn ball. But no, D'Ernest can't see the field if you're not even going to give the ball to Chubb.
Bill Belichick would do it. Jim, what were you going to say?
I was going to say, you know what's going to happen. Egomaniac Stefanski is going to be like, oh, all you people want me to run the ball? Guess what? All these running backs, gone.
Oh, no,
gone us to pass to Odell. Guess what?
Gone. It better not happen. Listen, the thing, the conversation we just had totally brought me down to this next point. We had a couple notches down, so we'll just hit that. The Browns this game, somehow with Case Keenum even playing poorly, the defense stepped up. They ran the ball 41 times. Okay. Of course, that struck me. And so I looked back the last time that the Browns had Case Keenum starting, they also ran the heck out of the ball, I think 37 times. With Case Keenum at quarterback, the Browns won 2 games, but they also ran the ball 39 times a game. I don't know if you guys saw it on the spreadsheet yet or not, but if you didn't, would you like to guess how many times the Browns ran the ball with Baker Mayfield under center per game?
I'm going to take a wild guess and say 25, but I would like to hear the actual number.
It is 26.
Oh my
God. A total for the season per game with Baker Mayfield under center, knowing that he's hurt and knowing that we're missing a bunch of our pass blocking tackles, the Browns chose to run the ball 26 times a game with Baker Mayfield under center. And here's where it gets even worse. This season, there was one game where this season where the Browns sort of just got demolished for the first time. And from that point on, they, you know, had a game or two that was pretty good, but they never quite looked the same. Do you guys remember which game that was, obviously?
The Patriots?
For me, it was Arizona.
Arizona.
They're right, though. We got rocked by the Patriots, but like a week or two before that, Arizona beat the pants off us. And it was like, ooh, that is a rough loss. Starting on that game and for the rest of the season, the Baker Mayfield under center 23 times a game, which puts them during that period like 13th in rushing attempts in the NFL. How in the world do you have the three running backs that we just talked about rotating in who are grading 75, 81, 82, rushing for 6 yards a carry, rushing for 7 yards a carry, leading the league in yards after contact and broken tackles? How do you have an injured quarterback, two like piles of injured pass blocking linemen, where the best thing you can still do is run block, and you're running the ball starting in game like 5 and on 23 times per game?
And Chad, this is outstanding. I wish our own Cleveland media can hit this on the head, because that is a great question and a great point.
The numbers are right there. And considering, I don't know why they didn't.
But. Yeah, I don't know why no one's talking about that. And considering you have an injured quarterback who's throwing at some games 4 picks a game, and you would think you could eliminate those picks with more running.
Yeah.
And the worst part about it, just to jump one more time in, is I think at the beginning of the season, like I said, Baker Mayfield's numbers were the running was slightly higher at the beginning of the season than the end. That was because the two biggest running games, I think, early in the season were, I believe, the Chargers and the Chiefs, both of who we unfortunately lost, but both of who were games where we thought, holy cow, the Browns offense looks pretty good this year. They put up 40 something points because they ran the ball like 30 something times. And then every other game we decided, how about we average around 20, 23?
Yeah, just Baker to bring Mayfield's that number down. Doing good.
Yeah, exactly. Like, what were they seeing that made them think, hey, you know what we should do? Throw the most. I don't know. But anyways, yeah, it's the most frustrating statistic I've ever found. I was like, you have got to be kidding me. Case Keenum under center, you run 40 times a game. Baker Mayfield, you run 20. Why?
Well, the only thing I can think of, Chad, is because when you're playing with Case Keenum, you're playing with house money. And what I mean by that is Stefanski's playing more relaxed, because if he loses, he can say it was my backup quarterback. He's playing with his mind clear. He's saying, I'm not, you know, pressure's not on. But when he's got Baker in, the pressure's on to win. He knew he had to win. And
yeah, but
I mean, the pressure's always on. But
really,
you know,
like when you, I guess looking back, though, what he's got to do is watch the film and go, the pressure's on to win, but that is how we win. At what point was it like, that's not a good enough way to win? Remember how you're always bringing up that Bill Belichick just does the obvious thing because we shouldn't give him that much credit? Why can't Stefanski just do the obvious thing? The obvious thing for the Browns to win is just run the damn ball.
And you're right. You're right.
If you get 2 yards of carry in the first drive, who cares?
You're 100% right. There's no need to overthink it.
There's something fishy between Baker and Stefanski.
There might be. And that's the best argument for it, because it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like he was trying to prove something.
Well, I think this gets that point across. If those numbers don't tell you everything you need to know, that guys were averaging 6+ yards per carry and leading the league in broken tackles and still only getting the ball, you know, in the middle of the pack, you know, compared to other teams, I just don't know what else you do to win. To me, it's frustrating. Just as frustrating as beating the Bengals twice and then watching them win the division and walk into the playoffs, when you know if you just ran the ball, that is you walking into the playoffs. So, I don't know. I wrote a little list asking what the Bengals have that we don't, because of what I just said. They, you know, we're able to beat them over and over and over in the last 2 years. So, what is it that they have that we don't? And I had 3 points, and then see what you guys have to add to it. Number one, they have receivers, and very clearly super talented ones. I made the point last week, I think their third best receiver is probably at this point better than our best receiver, which is tough.
I would agree with that.
Yeah. Number two, I wrote energy. They are playing fun and free and loose, a lot like we saw last year here in Cleveland. And we are playing stiff and pissed off and frustrated and tight. And three, they have a quarterback who is playing with leadership, swagger, rhythm, and we have one that was limping around most of the time, and a backup that came in a bit who both just didn't show good control, couldn't make the simple quick reads, and couldn't keep an offense going with any kind of rhythm or timing or anything that resembled like a fun or active.
Well, with the Bengals, Chad, I mean, you got Burrow. You have a team that is actually listening to its players. Joe Burrow says to, you know, coach and management, hey, we got to go out and get Ja'Marr Chase. Like, this dude's the real deal, and, like, it's going to be a good pick, rather than saying, like, an offensive line. And they listen to him, you know, and then you get these guys here. There's chemistry. That's what makes it fun, is when you feel like you have skin in the game. And I feel like the people in Cincinnati feel like they – have a say, where Cleveland now, I just it to me, it feels like it's the Stefanski show, and I hate it.
Yeah, I know.
It's not fun because he's not a fun guy. He's a boring ass dude. It's like listening to a fucking robot.
And that doesn't bother me so much that he's boring. To be honest, what bothers me with Stefanski is that he seems stubborn. And what I need in a head coach is somebody who is capable of reviewing himself and making the changes in order to make it be better. And
I listened to after that Bengals game. I listened to the locker room speech from Stefanski. It was the most boring shit I've ever heard in my entire life. Like it's like he's trying to rally this team and get them excited, but there was no clapping, like no cheering, like nothing. It was just him talking, but it just fell so flat.
Yeah, I think for me, I can have a boring head coach if I'm being honest, because I think some of the best head coaches in the league have been pretty boring. I mean, Bill Belichick is the obvious example, but there are several others. But if you have that, you better be able to out-scheme everybody so your team believes in your boring ass, or you better have an offensive and defensive coordinator who can do the firing up in your place. And Joe Woods is just getting his feet wet as far as his position with this team, so I wouldn't expect him to be jumping out. He's been on fire all season, but his butt's been on the hot seat for at least half of it. So it's not like he's going to jump out, and we don't really have an offensive coordinator. So you can't snooze the team to sleep if you don't have the scheme that makes them trust you, and you don't have another guy to kind of play, you know, bad cop for you or whatever you want to call it. So, you know, I do agree with you in that point. I don't always agree with you on all this Stefanski stuff, because I think you like him a lot less than me. But I can't disagree with that. I just think he's kind of a snoozer, and that only works if you are constantly successful in your game planning. You know, Greg Popovich is boring. He's snarky and he's kind of sarcastic and funny, but he's also just boring, and so is Bill Belichick. And a lot of coaches have pulled that off when they're that good, but he's not, and he needs some help somewhere. On the point, though, Jim, I wanted to bring up Penei Sewell really did turn out to have a phenomenal season. I think he finished PFF graded like a 77, and he was like a top – I want to say he was somewhere around a top 15 lineman overall, which is crazy for a rookie. That's really good. But I think the Bengals would have done great with him for Joe Burrow's future. That would have been great. I think they have other receivers who are good weapons. But the way he played with Ja'Marr Chase this year, I don't think there's any arguing that move really sparked them and may have made the difference between a playoff team and a team that just fell short.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, we shut him down, but of course we have the one of the best shutdown corners in the league covering him in Denzel Ward. So the next take that we are going down is another Trent Dilfer take. It is that kind of a controversial one to me, that Baker Mayfield and Joe Burrow, he said that although they aren't exactly the same person, they're equivalent players talent-wise. And I don't know. It's hard to even swallow that. I guess if you look at Baker last year and you compare him to Burrow this year, I can see maybe from his point of view looking at an overall player who they are. But it was so hard to hear that this year after Baker Mayfield had his worst year ever and Joe Burrow was playing at like a top five level. What do you guys think?
I'm not even sure from like what perspective that could be coming from, like that they play quarterback and they want to win football games. Like
their play style, not similar, but he thought if you take the positives of Baker Mayfield along with just the negatives and then the positives of Joe Burrow with the negatives, you have two players that are about equally capable at playing quarterback.
I guess I could see that. some of the things that I've heard about Burrow, or at least I've read that didn't make sense in watching him play, were actually about some of his deep balls and things like that, which I didn't expect. And I haven't dove into the data, but maybe that's where some of that's coming from, and just areas of the field he likes to hit, things like that. I haven't gone ahead and looked at any like any of the next gen stats info that actually points out kind of where they're both targeting things on the field. I mean,
coming out of college, I think it was supposed to be that Joe Burrow couldn't get the ball down the field, but I feel as if he's done a pretty fair job of that this year. Chase makes that seem maybe a little easier, but I don't know. It's like I said, it's hard to swallow after this season. I guess if I had never seen Baker Mayfield play this year and I just watched him last year and then I watched Joe Burrow this year and you said they're pretty similar, right, as far as skill level, I might have said, yeah, they were both pretty successful. But this year it's like, ugh, womp womp. Joe Burrow looks light years ahead of Baker Mayfield at the moment. The next one I had was just a take from Mary Kay, and that was that she had said that if you could, she had just said this to the group and some of them agreed and disagreed. I wondered what you guys would have said. She said, if you could take Baker Mayfield back next year and you were guaranteeing that they were going to draft a top level wide receiver who was looking like he could be a star and they were still going to sign another receiver next year, would you take that scenario without looking at other quarterbacks and be happy with that?
I don't think we have another choice. I mean, I would be, but his cost and his cap hit, who's actually available? It doesn't seem like anyone thinks we're getting Aaron Rodgers, so.
No, we'll go over the quarterbacks later in another pod, I think this is probably our option.
You can you can ask silly questions like that, and I think it's an absolutely ridiculous question to ask because he is going to be the quarterback. So at best it's lazy journalism or whatever it is that she does, but there's no alternative option of better or cheaper quarterbacks. So we're going to draft who we're going to get.
Yeah. It might be just what Jim said earlier, by the way, Jim was dropped off. We got cut off earlier and had to come back and Jim didn't make it back with us. But this sort of – the comment you just made reminds me of what Jim said earlier is – or maybe it was Chip, that you just say that and then – it was Chip. You just kind of say that, a take like that, and then when it is the most likely thing to kind of happen, you say, okay. And if it doesn't happen, you're like, well, it was just a hypothetical scenario.
Right. It's a win-win comment, I call it.
Yeah,
so
you
can either look like a genius – or you can bail out.
Yeah, she can
but
say,
you're not actually committing to anything.
Yeah, she can say, see, they did draft that quarterback, and we brought back Baker Mayfield, and see, like I said, it was just the right combination. And if it doesn't work, she can just say, hey, I was just saying, what would you guys take in that scenario? And then the last one was another guy, and I can't remember who this was either. I should start writing down who said him. Not that it matters, but he said, I believe you need a top 12 quarterback to win the Super Bowl in this league. And I don't know, where are you guys on the idea that you need a top 12 quarterback to win the Super Bowl?
Let me ask you this. Do you have a list of who was the number 25 quarterback? I bet you whoever that is probably could have led us to the playoffs and probably beyond that.
I was just going to say, I bet you whoever it was is much higher ranked than Baker Mayfield.
Oh yeah, I think Baker's got to be ranked in 30, maybe. I mean, it's somewhere really low.
I was actually thinking oppositely because I was thinking in almost every year, it seems like the Super Bowl winning quarterback is actually a top, I don't know, 5 to 7 guy, and it's pretty much 9 out of 10 years. And otherwise, you have to have that Philly miracle year every 10 years where you don't have the top 10 quarterback, but you still pull the Super Bowl win. But I see your point, Chip, that this year with the Browns roster, you're right. Even a guy who played pretty mediocre. So Tua was the number 25 ranked quarterback this year, which is much higher than Baker Mayfield, who finished 30th, just above Jared Goff and Trevor Lawrence.
I mean, look, as long as you don't turn the ball over as much as he did, and you could hand off, you already improved our chances of winning.
Baker Mayfield is down with Trevor Siemian, Justin Fields, and Andy Dalton in his rankings. The guys, the guys above him, yeah, like 25 is Tua, Lamar Jackson's 24, Carson Wentz was 23. It almost seems like in this particular year, with how close we were in so many games, those guys might have been able to get us at least a playoff berth, which is sad. But
I mean, if you're just looking at, like, say, yards, which is obviously not, it's not PFF, it's barely even stats, it's a flat number. I mean, 12 and 13 are Garoppolo and Mac Jones, so they're in the playoffs. Don't think they're going anywhere. And 15 has been Roethlisberger. None of those teams are winning the Super Bowl. That's fine. You have Rodgers. Kirk Cousins is 9 out. Justin Herbert was 2nd out. Stafford not playing well. Mahomes, Derek Carr, Joe Burrow, Dak Prescott, Josh Allen. Like, Aaron Rodgers, 10 in yards. I mean, most of those guys we think have a shot out of the top 12. But not all of them are even in the playoffs, and the ones towards the bottom, like, we're writing off. Like,
I think that kind of washes the take. Like, maybe you could do better with a guy that isn't quite there, and maybe even if you have a guy that's there, you're not going anywhere. I just thought it was an interesting one because it seemed like such an arbitrary number. Like, it sounded like he just made it up. Like, oh, you need a top 12 to go to the Super Bowl.
Like, is this fantasy are you football basing that we're on? Doing?
Yeah.
We're doing.
Did you look at? Leagues? Yeah, have you looked at the last 20 Super Bowls and just looked and saw that they were all top 12? Like, what made you pick that number? Some guys just throw stuff out there. It's garbage. Garbage take. Okay, so real quick, the things that we have at the end here are the quarterback school that I started watching a little bit more of with Baker Mayfield episode. And then a quick Cavs breakdown, because Chip and I are just really vibing on the Cavs right now. And then we can call it quits. The quarterback school. Have you guys ever heard of this or watched it? It's pretty similar to that thing I sent you from, oh my gosh, what's his name? Kurt. Oh my goodness. Who's the quarterback that they're making the movie of right now?
Yeah, the dude that was bagging groceries. Yeah,
it's Kurt Warner. So first of all, that's going to be an awesome movie to watch. I think it is Chuck playing Kurt Warner in that movie, like Chuck, the guy from the show Chuck.
I have not seen who's doing.
I have not seen, but I will say this: I am a lot more excited to see that movie than the one about Sean Payton. Did you see the? And I hate to change your topic here, but did you see the clip of the movie about Sean Payton?
I had no idea there was one.
Okay, so that big dude, he played Paul Blart, Mall Cop.
Yeah.
His name Kevin something.
Kevin James.
Kevin James. He's supposed to play Sean Payton.
What?
Oh, I'm dead serious. Okay. Did you not see this?
Okay. I didn't hear anything about this.
Oh, I'm dead serious. And it's about the year, I guess, he got suspended. And so he went and participated in his son's football team instead of.
Right. I remember that.
So
I remember that happening, but I didn't know they made a movie out of it.
Yeah, they made a movie. Okay, it looks terrible. It looks. Don't even waste your time on the trailer.
I'm excited for Greg Williams 2G's that in that
like,
movie.
That sounds That's like a. That sounds like a two. I can't wait to see who plays him. I hope it's Kevin Hart. I think that. I remember that scenario happening and playing out, and it was such a crazy football story. What you just described sounds like a Saturday Night Live skit. Like they,
yeah,
did that,
it doesn't
like,
look like it's a. It doesn't look like they're taking it seriously either. It looks like a comical take on it.
Well, that was a fun veer off. But so what we were talking about is the quarterback school with. So Kurt Warner does basically a quarterback breakdown thing. So JT O'Sullivan, who is an old kind of mediocre journeyman backup quarterback in the NFL. Does something called quarterback school, and week by week he breaks down different quarterbacks, and it's very good if you don't know a lot about football or even if you just want refreshers. He teaches you a bunch about routes, quarterback dropbacks, different play breakdowns, and I'm making it sound boring, but it's pretty cool to see him just talk about quarterbacks, and he does it at a very like watcher friendly thing, but he was super critical, and he did the Baker Mayfield from late in the season, like how Baker Mayfield was playing at the end of the season, and he went over a couple games in the last 3 or 4 weeks, and man, was he just crushing Baker Mayfield. And I didn't even feel bad for Baker Mayfield. It was very eye-opening because I've been very openly blaming this injury on a lot of Baker's problems, and his play in the last month goes beyond the injury, because the injury is not getting worse. And I think all of us over the last couple of podcasts have agreed he is getting worse. And so I don't know if he's just trailing off, or he's frustrated, or he's like, the losing is getting to him, or he's trying too hard to overcompensate. But essentially, if you have a chance, check it out, Quarterback School. I watched it on YouTube with JT O'Sullivan. He breaks down Baker Mayfield's footworks, and his big key points that he kept going back to were two things that really bothered me about Baker Mayfield. And maybe it will come up in our future conversations about what we want to do with him going forward. But the number one thing that bothered me was he kept bringing up how slow Baker Mayfield's decision-making was and how many times he missed either his first read or the first open receiver because he just didn't pull the trigger. Even if it seemed like he looked that way and saw the play breaking down, he just hesitated to pull the trigger, and it led him to having to do something like scramble, because after he didn't release the ball there, by that time the defense was getting in on him, and or he just looked to make a bigger play down the field after that. And that really bothered me. And the second thing was he kept going over Baker's dropbacks and how on time after time, Baker not only drops back on half step drop. So if it's a 3-step drop, 5-step drop, sometimes 7-step drop, he mentioned that Baker kept doing this half step where he'd do like a 3.5-step drop. And then all of a sudden a guy would be open, but because he did another half step, he would have to land and then hop forward and then throw the ball. Because instead of stopping and planting on his third step and getting ready to wind up, he was just taking a lazy another step. And now the receiver's coming open, but he has to plant that foot, and he's either out of position or has to change his position to throw. And that not only made his processing time seem slower, but it also caused another group of really late passes. And I think we all saw that probably through the season, right? He's either missing a wide open guy, or he's throwing it way after the guy's wide open, and it's getting defended. The defender's getting there in time. And I think you guys kind of seeing that same stuff in Baker lately.
That's pretty interesting. I was blatantly discounting not everything, but a lot on his feet. So to get that kind of detail, yeah. I could definitely see where that would seem boring to some folks, but anytime I can have someone who's an expert at like a position, mm-hmm. educate me on it and players' individual moves, whether it's footwork or Chris Long talking about DN stuff on his pod, just any of those things, it is pretty interesting to me. So giving a little further context to what's going on, that sounds pretty interesting to me, and also worrisome.
Yeah, it's worrisome. I thought so too. What do you think, Chip? Anything on that?
Yeah, I mean, I never watch him that closely to have a real strong opinion on it. But
I think the game almost goes too fast for just regular fans to catch it. I think that's something you'd have to see the film room.
The big injury that I had my eye on was where he had the brace on his shoulder, and I thought that maybe he was overthrowing guys because of the brace was disrupting his mechanics.
Maybe that did have something to do with it. Maybe that's throwing off like when he's thinking or making him nervous or something, or maybe he's always had this footwork problem and he's had such a good arm, he's made up for it by really zipping the ball. And now that other arm is strapped to him, he can't. And now when he makes a late throw, we keep seeing it. That was one of the thoughts I had, but I think we all probably would agree that he is making late throws and missing open guys.
Yeah. That does sound interesting. I'd like to go back and watch that. When I have the opportunity,
I would check it out, because really the way he points it out, I'm like, I could never have seen that in a game. It's just the game goes too fast for you to catch that.
We don't know what we're looking for in the plays.
Yes. And he admits sometimes, I don't know who the first read on this was, but I can tell you the drops on this play, and he took too many steps, and it kept happening over and over. And it makes me really nervous, because thinking that what we talked about earlier in the season with his shoulder being injured, the best chance we had of success was him compensating for it by just playing really well and having good mechanics. And it sounds like his mechanics just broke down and got worse and worse as the season went on. And that's just a matter of either him just not being diligent enough or coaching not being good enough. And it makes me nervous, because that's bad news for a quarterback.
If you add that to Stefanski's like uber timed offense where everything is kind of hitch and go, be on your marks. So you have a quarterback who can't hit his marks, Odell who wanted to run around and do other things. Also makes me think a little more about that whole situation.
Yeah.
Even if he was. But yeah, that's interesting to see how that's going to play out between those two, because if he can't hit his marks, I don't have a lot of hope for next year. Then that really kills my hope for the,
it was pretty discouraging. I would say watch it anyway, because it sounds like that wasn't that wasn't really the case last year. And it wasn't the case early in the season, but somewhere along the season, things just went bad. So check it out. Quarterback School with JT O'Sullivan. And I'll probably put a link on our Instagram page for it. Coast number two, Coast X3. And last but not least, a little breaking Cavs news. Chip and I have gotten very excited about the Cavs lately. I'm trying to temper my excitement actually at this point, because I'm starting to feel a Chip level of excitement. And that's just never good for me. I don't want to get my hopes up. I want to stay nice and even keel Dale and have my expectations right here so that I don't get disappointed. But watching this team play, it's hard not to get excited. Chip, give us the new news.
Well, yeah, man, it's fun to get excited. Cavs are finally starting to get their health back and back on the court with the big three that I consider Garland, Mobley, and Allen. And it's exciting. I think we got Rondo filling in for the injured Rubio. He's obviously not – yeah, he's not what Rubio was on pace for, but he is obviously the best fill at the price we could have got, I think.
I think it really shows, too, that this organization was like, we lost that guy and nobody is going to replace him, but we need to keep this pace and keep competing. So let's bring in the closest veteran that we can. And it really tells you a lot about the fact that they're not ready to just let these guys develop. They want to compete.
Well, yeah. And I think that they realize they have a shot at the playoffs. And I was also reading this thing the other day that we haven't made the playoffs without LeBron since like sometime in the early 90s, Cleveland Cavaliers. So like, this is a big deal to make the playoffs without LeBron for us, you know, we can
My take on sports is often the same. And I know we had a little draft pick conversation earlier with the Cavs. So I know it's going to sound like I'm wishy-washy on that, but I think in most scenarios, if you are not slotted to get a top pick and you just don't have a very good chance either in basketball to get that top lottery pick or in football to get up in that like top 10, I think it's so important for a team to make the playoffs, because your young players will play at a level that they've never seen. And if you want to progress, just getting in, even if you're going to get smoked in the first round a year or two, that's just so important. So for the Cavs, knowing that we're almost too good, unless there's some crazy injury stuff happening, knowing that we're probably too good to be grabbing like a superstar Giannis, LeBron, Durant level guy in the draft at the top, I think I'm on board with their plan. I think you should go all out to try to just get in.
Yeah, and once you get in, like I always say, you never know what can happen. Anything happens in the playoffs. So just get your foot in the door and let's see what happens.
True. I'm just happy for the development and the experience, but you're right. Who knows? Maybe you hit a gold streak.
I know Wednesday we play is it Wednesday? Yeah, Wednesday we play Utah Jazz. They are a hot team. They got 28 wins and led by Donovan Mitchell. So that'll be a tough game. We're on a West Coast road trip right now. So I was talking to a guy at work and I said, best case scenario, let's just try to come 3-3 out of this West Coast and then come back home to the East Coast. And you know, we'll get back on our winning streak. But it's always hard in basketball when you do these long trips, on a far from home. And,
They've ended up pulling some wins on this trip. They beat Portland. They got beat up pretty good against the Warriors. And then yesterday they won one of the sloppiest games. You know, they were up by 10 with like a minute and 10 seconds left, and they won by one with a defensive stand at the end. I wasn't sure if I was disgusted by that or encouraged that they didn't give it up, because I think a lot of Cavs teams in the past would have.
Yeah, I was going back and forth last night between the championship game and the Cavs.
Yes, me too.
And I stayed up a lot later than I expected last night, but I just couldn't. Both games were right down to the wire and very exciting, and I just, my adrenaline was up on both games. It was awesome. It was a good night.
Before we go into a quick talk about the national championship game, what did you go over the Kobe Altman news?
I did not, but he has been signed until 2028.
Okay. And I think, man, has he earned it, because I've been critical of some of these draft picks, but if you look at the position we've picked and the guys they've pulled out of that position over the last, like 3 years, he really has kind of maximized their position. Mobley looks like a superstar in the making. At point guard, I think there's a development that I wasn't even sure we were going to see with Garland in the short time that he's been playing, and especially with the playing time he's gotten and some of the things he's probably learned from Rubio, and now maybe what he can learn from Rondo, especially, my goodness, you want to talk about a tenacious guy who's willing to play some defense. I'm not sure Garland has the capacity, but he really has turned himself into an all-around player that I see has, now I do admit I was kind of wrong on him. He has superstar potential all over him.
It's like you and I were talking about the one night in a text. He has developed himself into such a player that if I had to move on from Sexton, I don't feel as bad about it as I once have.
I
used to be
either.
Pretty upset about that argument, and now I'm starting to come around to it.
Because he's younger, and I think at this point in his career already, he is, although Sexton, you just can't argue, is one of the best scorers on the field when he was was playing around the court. But Garland has turned himself into just this great all-around player who I think just is a better person for building a team around. And like we talked about yesterday, he wasn't dropping buckets like he has in the past. And so you turn around and look, and all of a sudden he's got 11 assists. It's like, oh, my shot's not going down today, so I'm gonna figure out ways to dish it to everybody else, and we're still gonna find ways to make points. He just makes points with some of these guys,
right?
So,
and I know how we can get Dale in on this, and I would ask you, Dale, what is Garland's top shot going for now?
he does have a few of them. I can pull them up. I do want to give you the really terrible news on you not snagging a Mobley. That was a huge mistake.
Oh, God. I don't even want to think about it. There was a time I think he was at about 225. I remember texting you and saying.
Yeah, I think it's like 450 or 550 right now.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so Garland's got, let's see, he's got 7 moments out there right now. Some of the rarest one is about $2,000. And the cheapest one is 7. So I actually need to grab another one of those. But, yeah, he's got a couple of those, and
I disagree. Now this is some good talk. Now you can cut the stat part if you want. This is way better use of our time.
Hey, I agree. This is funny though. 99 legendary, $2,000 is only 8 listed.
Can I just point out that you just basically threw out a worm on a hook and just told the fish, like, "Hey, I'm gonna catch you with it," and then immediately Dale swims over and he's like, "Yum yum yum yum."
Yep.
Yep, didn't stand a chance.
No, you're right. That's a good idea. You keep up with the Cavs via Top Shot, and we're going to keep you in this conversation somewhere. I don't know, Dale. I'm going to challenge you to this. I'm going to challenge you to watch like 3 Cavs games and tell me that you can avoid watching them all.
If I can get them, that's my problem is getting them.
A lot of people are struggling.
You're going to get addicted, because I watched a couple and I was like, this team is so good. I think you can buy, if you're interested, I think you can buy the Bally Sports Package, which I think like 90% of the games are on, and just have it as an individual app on your TV. I know that's kind of annoying, but
okay. I mean, give that a try. Stream everything anyway, so
yeah. And then our last topic of the day, the college football national championship is not Alabama. I am shocked. So for those who don't know, my fiance was a Georgia Bulldog. She graduated from Georgia, one of her 2 schools. And she couldn't even watch the game. She just kept walking in, looking at the score, walking in the bedroom, and then close the door. And
I know that feeling.
She would hear me. She would hear me go, yes! And then she would come running out. And she's like, what happened? And I'm interception. And she's like, yeah. And then she would just turn around and walk right back into the room. And I know she was following on her phone too, but she refused to watch it. But I would just have to say, I felt like Atlanta fans feel a lot like Cleveland fans. They're just waiting for the other shoe to drop. Like last year in the last game of the season, when we're up on the Steelers by like 3 touchdowns, and we're still all wondering, like, okay, how does this go wrong? We cheer after the touchdown, but then we go, okay, there's still 2 quarters left. Like, anything can happen. It doesn't matter that we're up 21. That's how Atlanta fans feel all the time, despite just recently winning the World Series. And so to watch this was hilarious with her because I'm somehow in the same boat. I'm sitting there watching, and I'm like, well, there's no way Nick Saban doesn't dig them out of this. And somehow Georgia's defense was able to hold on, and their offense put together their best string of drives for the fourth quarter for the whole game. And they just started pounding the ball. They stopped getting afraid of the run. They made some just rhythm passes one after another. And then they terrorized Alabama's quarterback at the end of the game for the last 2 drives. And they pulled off just a monster win. I was so excited for them, given that Alabama is the pedigree to just win that type of game.
Yeah, it was good to see them go back to the run like that, because that's really kind of what you thought they were going to be able to. The only chance they had to be able to kind of push it was just really be physical on the ground with the ball, which was pretty cool.
Yeah.
When it made you mad, I think, about the Browns.
Yeah. They kind of remind me of the Browns because, well, they have this very stout defense that you want to reward with a good run game. And Stenson Bennett, while he won that game, I don't think anyone is actually going back and saying, man, that Stenson Bennett. Even his QBR was, he got a 71.
That was his his moment in the center. When he walked off that field with the cigar, yeah, Joe Burrow, yeah, style, I said, you know the difference between him and Joe Burrow is? Joe Burrow smoking the cigar and just watching the cash pour in as his stock rises to the first pick in the draft. And this kid is going to be living off this moment, and rightfully so, for the rest of his life.
He also didn't pull it off as smooth as Burrow. Like, he looked like he was awkward, struggling with it for a moment, and then, like, he was afraid to inhale. I thought he was going to start coughing.
His story is fantastic, but yeah, his cigar performance fits kind of his overall performances. It's just like, he's just piecing it together and just, you know.
If you do want a good laugh, you can find it on Twitter and probably a bunch of other places, but he did a quick interview on Good Morning America, and I don't know who allowed him to physically sit in front of a camera and speak on Good Morning America. I don't think that person likes him very much, but it's hilarious. He is absolutely annihilated while giving this interview, and somehow went way better than I expected. But definitely a good laugh if anyone needs one.
That's awesome. Yeah, I don't know if he has any future. Like Chip said, he's not a top-notch prospect. But with a defense that played the way they played, they really needed a quarterback to get them through that game, and he pulled it off, man. And he's going to be living the dream probably for the rest of his life with that championship ring. And more power to him. I hope he has success in other places too. But props to Georgia. You're having a hell of a year. I'm envious of you guys having a college and professional championship in the same year. That's awesome. You know, I'll take any championship we can get in Ohio, unless it's the Bengals. And so that's awesome for them. It's really exciting. Nick Chubb was probably so happy he smoked for.
Yeah, yeah.
Just a little bit, though. Then back to business.
Yeah. And then back to business.
That's what a game. It was great. It was one of the more fun ones I watched for a while. And it was hilarious because Kat said, that was just not that great of a game. Kind of, it must have been boring for you at the beginning. And I actually felt a little bit of Chip excitement because I was hyped about that 6-9 and 3-6 for the first couple of quarters, because it wasn't just like nothing could happen. It was that defenses were not allowing the other team to score. It was big defensive stands after drives. And so that was Chip, what you always described as just loving that defensive battle. So
yeah,
it wasn't actually a boring game, even though it was low scoring. It was fun. Who's signing up to new coverage? So that's about it for me. If you guys don't have anything else, my battery is at about 2%, and I think it's okay to close this out.
Yeah, I agree. Sorry about that. For some reason, if I leave the ESPN app open too long, it just starts playing videos with sound at random.
Oh, that's a super fun feature.
Yeah. So, all right. Yeah.
So next week we got some talk about the free agents the Browns have. We're going to cover the playoffs, and then we're going to get into some position groups and, you know, how each one did or who we have on the roster. And we'll start looking towards next year, just little by little. We'll hit breaking news here and there. I don't know. We haven't decided completely how we're going to keep up with the pod during the off season, but we'll be trying to bring something to you guys.
Yeah. I hope to, you know me, I'm a big draft guy, so I'm hoping to cover some draft hype from time to time.
Yeah, we should. We'll start hitting. We'll probably hit like a weekly mock draft, at least to somebody that's set for the Browns. And on that note, since it was related to Georgia, you know, best wishes to that wide receiver, because he was somebody who was on my Cleveland Browns wish list. And we'll probably talk about that next week as we hit some of the position groups.
Yeah.
So, but it was the only sad thing about the game, and it worked out great for Georgia. But after the game was over, I immediately had a little heart drop, like, oh no, that was kind of somebody pretty high on my list. And it looks very clear to me it's an ACL tear. So he's going to get himself back there, and he'll probably be no worse for wear once he's back on the field. So I'm not going to sweat it. So that's what you guys have to look forward to. That's what we're going to be hitting soon. Try to keep up with the pod if you can. We love the support. And from the Coast to Coast team, for Jim, Chip, and Dale, let's sign it off.
All right, fellas. Take care.
Have a good one. Thanks for listening.